and welcome to this episode of Real Geeks. As you've no doubt noticed, everybody is in social isolation because
we're being good and we're smart.
Yeah, we're not spring breakers in Florida.
If I get corona, I get corona. At the end of the day, I'm not going to let it stop me from partying.
We're not stupid. So, I am, of course, Mike Montgomery, and I am joined by Vita.
Hello!
And our special guest for this episode is Vita's daughter, Kyla.
Hello. Although some of you might know me as my internet handle, Okome.
And Kyla is taking the traditional remote recording role of person with no camera. We were originally, of course, scheduled to review Disney's Mulan. And then the world went, no, you're not.
Yeah.
I should probably ask, is cursing allowed?
What level
of cursing is allowed?
I have no standards for this show at all.
Okay.
I had the very same question the very first time I reviewed a movie with Real Geeks, and Mike's response was to just start swearing, so.
Immediately.
Okay, cool. I just wanted to make sure.
fair enough. But, you know, like I said, we were scheduled to review Mulan, and since I'm an insanely stubborn person, come hell or high water, we are going to goddamn review Mulan! Just not the new one!
Even if we were able to get out and gather and do this, we still wouldn't be able to review the new Mulan because Disney's held it off until further notice.
We're going to be instead doing the famous 1998 Mulan.
God, is
it bad? I love it.
Which is actually technically, I believe, the final film of Disney's second golden age of animation, and was actually apparently the last animated musical film that they did for, I think it works out to have been a little under 10 years, because it was this one, and then the next theatrical one would have been 2009's Princess and the Frog.
Yeah.
I live on IMDb trivia. I mean, we can do. Now, for the few of you who don't know, and also, as much as we normally put in a spoiler warning, look, it's a movie from 1998.
If you haven't seen it yet, that's your own dang problem.
Exactly.
This is, of course, Mulan, who the movie can't seem to decide is the person holding her family's house together, or is an incompetent refugee from a Three Stooges movie. Because there were points in the movie where she kind of goes either way, but the Emperor of China basically enacts a draft because Hun warriors have managed to breach the Wall of China like it was nothing. Because apparently the Great Wall of China wasn't actually that great.
Well, and I mean, he does say at one point in time, he invited me, the Emperor invited me, he built this wall as a challenge to me, so.
Oh, that's true, but like the only reason I say this is that as I was watching the movie, the Huns climbed that wall like you'd swear they had spider powers.
Maybe they
like did. They got up and over that thing so damn quick.
Well, like in the trailer for the live action, you see like they've apparently got the help of a witch, so maybe that's how they went about explaining it in the live action, that they were backed supernaturally.
Which, yeah, like that would have made like at least as much sense as a movie like this is going to make.
Yeah.
And obviously, I think with a lot of the complaints that I'm going to have, you of course have to stop and go, yeah, it's a late 90s kids movie.
Yeah, it's a late 90s kids movie. Also, the Huns were terrifying.
Yeah, they were actually going to be one of my favorite things about the film for that exact reason. Not only that they were terrifying, but Disney makes them terrifying without beating you over the head with the fact that they're terrifying.
Yeah, like, on screen, they don't play a huge part in the movie until essentially the climax and the end. So everything that they do off screen, like they move quickly, they amass quickly. It is terrifying.
Yeah, and the nice thing is that Miguel Ferrer, who played Shan Yu, the leader of the Hun Warriors, the wonderful thing is they do a lot with his character, but don't ask much of him. Mm-hmm. It's more the basic Disney clearly had a lot of faith in their animators.
Well, by that point in time, I mean, Disney had been doing this for a while.
Oh, they had, but if I'm remembering that trivia section right, this was actually sent to an animation studio that they had in Florida, which at the time was still a very new studio.
Still easily one of my favorite Disney movies.
Yeah.
You guys, you and your sister, well, and again, to be fair, this is one of my favorite Disney movies too. So you come by it honestly, but this is one of those ones that, so Kyla, you would have been 5 when this came out. Your sister would have been 2. And this is one of the movies that was played pretty much on repeat in our house. Like, as soon as the closing credits hit, it was, Mom! And I had to rewind the VHS now. This is going back a ways. And it hit play again because it was... I was so glad when DVDs came out.
Yeah.
No, I can imagine.
Yeah, it was a lot easier.
So, every family in China has to send... one man to join the army, and when they get to Mulan's family, of course it's her father, subtly being key here, where they show that clearly if this man goes to war, he is not coming back.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Like, there's actually, I watched a video last night, and it compared the animated version, the live version that was supposed to come up, along with the Ballad of Mulan, which is the written poem that came out however long ago. And they compared the different versions. So apparently in the Ballad of Mulan, and there's a couple of different versions there as well, one of them, he goes to war and doesn't come back. Another one... he passes away while Mulan is gone. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, he's an elderly gentleman who, I don't want to say frail, but he's physically he's not a young pup anymore.
So he's old at a time when being old is rare for a reason.
Exactly. Yeah. And this is, I think this is Mulan's biggest issue, is that she sees how much her father has to deal with just to pass his day, because yes, he is older, he does have physical issues, he's walking with a cane, and yeah, I mean, typical daughter, she's worried about her dad.
So she takes his sword, takes his armor. This is where I had a bit of a problem in terms of the timeline of the movie, because I kind of got the sense that He was supposed to report essentially like at dawn. She gets there awful fast and then doesn't report in for so long, and I can totally see why, but I'm also going, you reported in pretty late and nobody seems to be saying anything.
I mean, beggars can't be choosers. You're drafting. You're literally getting any bipedal male that you can who can hold a sword. They were about to draft an elderly man with a limp.
Oh yeah, no, exactly. I mean, like I said, that's a bit, like, it's a bit of a, but it's that, yeah, I can let this slide. I only really had 2 problems with the movie overall. Unfortunately, one of them was Mushu.
What?
Well, this is the thing. I had never watched the movie like back in the day.
Blasphemy.
So, like, I've already had years of him as Donkey.
Fair.
And, like, because that, for me, they feel very much like the same character.
Well, that's because he's been typecasted. He plays that character.
But, and I mean, take a look at Beverly Hills Cop, or the movie series that I don't want to admit that exists, Dr. Doolittle. That is his character. That is Eddie Murphy. It's not a huge stretch.
I think it's more of a case of they clearly weren't doing anything with him, and I don't know whose fault that is.
That does beg an interesting question, because I know a lot of Robin Williams voice acting stuff, for example, they just let him go.
There was so many people that, man, just put him in a room, let him ad-lib, and let's see how much of it's salvageable.
Well, like, even there is a video clip out there of him on Sesame Street, for example, and there's, like, a million different takes of him just coming in with different material, and then just them trying to find something that sticks, right? So, looking at Robin Williams' characters in the past, like Genie, or from Ferngully, and so on and so forth, like how zany or how crazy or how fast spoken and wild those characters seem, just a lot of that is just him ad-libbing.
Basically, and I think particularly where you bring up the genie from Aladdin, like that's interesting to note specifically because that's why Eddie Murphy was brought into this movie, because with Mushu they wanted essentially another genie. The only other real problem that I had with the movie was with the Emperor's advisor, Chifu.
Oh my god.
Played by James Hong.
Probably sniveling little shit.
That was a weasel, okay? He was a weasel.
I love James Hong. Even just because to everyone else, they'll see him as this thoroughly adorable Asian man. And I'm like, no, that's David Lopan. You do not trust this man.
Now, this really pisses me off to no end.
No, you don't, exactly.
But he in this movie, he's, like we talked about how Mushu is essentially there to be an analog for the genie.
Yep.
Again, filmed by studio committee. And Chifu is pretty much there to be the Jafar. He's there to essentially make life difficult for Lee Shan and all the other characters in the army, but I had no idea why.
Because he's a sycophant, and every division has that sycophant. I am here to act in the stead of your commanding officer, and that's the whole point. Chifu is there to be that sycophant that everyone knows exists.
True, but I think at the same time, the movie doesn't really do much to establish that. Like, with Jafar, you have that clear sense that his goal is, he wants the throne, he wants to rule Agrabah. Chifu is like, I'm not sure why you're doing, like, you're just there to be annoying.
Yes, that was the whole point. At least Jafar had, he had drive, he had command, whether it was given or taken. Chifu didn't have that. He was literally a weak ass shitty glass of tea. There's nothing there about him that is supposed to be noteworthy or deep. He is not a deep character until he puts himself on the floor of the palace. So
I mean, like, one could argue, was it Aladdin came out, like, It was Aladdin, then it was Pocahontas, then it was Mulan. So it was entirely possible that they saw the formula that worked with Aladdin. And, like, you guys are making the analogs and, like, the comparisons of some characters from Mulan to Aladdin. So they were probably trying to replicate that in some essence.
No,
so maybe
no
that's
offense.
why Chifu was required. But also, you needed a means of antagonist in Mulan's life in the army there. Because other than nearly being found out by Shang, was his name?
Yeah.
You needed somebody else who was also nip at the heels.
I think when it just kind of, like, if there had been, say, one line to set up the idea that he's secretly working for the Huns and is therefore there to sabotage the training camp, or what, like that one line to go, okay, this is why he's doing it, then I think that would have been really all I needed.
But he wasn't working for the Huns.
No, he's saying that if he had the excuse as to why he was being a Shahid.
Moving on to Mulan herself, and especially looking back on this film from a historical perspective, good God, Disney has been good to Ming-Na Wen.
Yeah.
Because like, it just happened to occur to me last night that literally everything that I know her from is a Disney property.
Huh. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like Mulan, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and The Mandalorian.
I'm trying to think. Wasn't she in a medical TV series? I think it was ER. If that's the case, then that's where I know her from.
Yeah. Yeah, I had thought of that last night. It was like, I know I've seen her in a doctor's uniform somewhere, but for the life of me.
Oh, she was also in Eureka.
Like, her voice work here is great. The only real issue I had with Mulan herself was, like I said earlier, early on in the movie, I don't think they quite knew how to write her. It seemed like it took them an act, maybe an act and a half, to figure it out. Because like at the start of the movie, her work smarter, not harder approach to the chores around the house, it kind of seemed like she was the only one holding the family together. And then a few scenes later, suddenly she's this absolute klutz.
Well, yes and no. it's her grandmother, her mother, her father. In the animated version, she doesn't have any siblings. So yeah, it is up to her to do as much of the chores as possible because she's the youngest and the most physically capable.
Yeah, and on top of that, it's also very common in Chinese culture for the eldest child to take on a lot of that, like going out to the fields, tending to the gardens, picking the harvest, bringing it home, prepping dinner, making sure the rest of the family's fed, doing the dishes. Like, that is solely on the eldest child.
Yeah.
As soon as they become of age.
Oh, yeah. It worked because, like, you see her clearly holding this house together, and then Mom is rushing her off for the meeting with the matchmaker, and you can't help but go, wait a second, she's holding your house together for you, what are you doing? And I think because of that, like, you sympathize with her more.
What you have to look at is, at home, she's in her element.
Yeah.
It's surroundings that she's familiar with, it's work that she knows, that she understands, and when she's brought to meet the matchmaker, okay, so they're going to put me in a funny dress, they're going to put makeup on me, and gods know I don't like when people have makeup on my face. So now she's out of her element.
Yeah.
And all of that is putting more anxiety on her.
Mm.
And that's where it becomes the comedy of errors. So one little tiny thing, like the ink on her arm, and all of that just spirals out of control to Kriki being in the teacup. And it just, one little thing, because she's out of her element, spirals it all out.
Yeah, so, and there's also... There's also a lot of pressure put on her to get a husband and to do well at the matchmaker, to get a good husband, because once two Chinese families are unified, basically they all move in and they all, like, work and live together in a single estate or a plot of land. And it's not so much that they are marrying their daughter off, it's that they are trying to stabilize and cement their line to continue on with this, because in order for their livelihood to continue, they need to join with another family.
Yeah,
I've been binging a lot of Chinese farming videos.
Oops, nothing wrong with that. And, well, like I said, there's an inconsistency there, but there it's an inconsistency that works. But then we come to the scene where she's putting on her father's armor, and we get what's almost the equivalent of a training montage, where she, like, takes the sword, looks like she has some degree of skill with the sword. Maybe her father had trained her a bit off camera or something.
Mm.
And then two scenes later, she goes to take the sword out of the hilt and suddenly she's incapable of holding solid objects. And it was there, it doesn't work because there are moments like that where it seems like you're doing slapstick comedy just to do slapstick comedy.
And it's entirely possible that was the case for the children's movie.
Yeah. And I mean, children's, again, late 90s movie where I don't think the same importance is really placed on these things.
Nah.
But, like, at the same time, though, I think it was after that, once the story moves into the training camp, that they seemed to settle down and really figure out what they were going to do with her and her story.
Yeah.
And I don't think that, like, this, speaking of the training camp, the sequence with the arrow.
Yep.
I'm just waiting to find out that Captain America, the first Avenger, looked at that sequence and went, "We're in a military camp. Let's do that." Because first Avenger had, of course, the scene of, you know, whoever is the first to climb up and get the flag gets a ride back to base or whatever it was, and it's the same thing.
Basically the same thing, yeah.
And, I mean, obviously also, of course, both Disney properties.
True.
So I've got to figure that somebody in the MCU offices was a fan.
I'm thinking, though, if you see other movies where there's basic training or something to that effect, that story plays through across the board.
Yeah. Yeah, like, there's a lot of, especially with Lee Shen himself, there's a lot where it's like, yeah, that's how military training actually does work. A lot of the sequences with him, especially early on in the camp, I think it's like you're supposed to hate him, but at the same time, no, he's the captain. That's actually what he's supposed to be doing.
Yeah, he is, for lack of a better word, he's supposed to be a hard ass. Like, this is a time of war, and if he doesn't prepare these, well, young boys, like, freshly out of the mother's womb, like, these guys are gonna die. Like, that is, unfortunately, the reality of war, and I think that it does come off as him being a hard ass because they can't really translate the whole, like, life and death circumstances in a kid's movie terribly well, but that's just how it be.
Yeah, this movie is clearly not for me. The people that love it and defend it, I get why.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, though, has it aged well?
Oh, probably not.
Like I said, in terms of general themes, there's a lot of wonderful stuff there. That very first number, I think Bring Honor to Us All.
Yeah.
Sounds a little stereotypical Asian.
But that's just it. I mean, even up until recently, and by recently I'm thinking 20, 30 years ago, that was the mindset in
Asia. Yeah, exactly.
So has it aged? Yeah, because it's only been recently that things in Asia have changed.
What did you mean, like, the soundtrack was stereotypically Asian?
Thankfully, it was just that first song.
Yeah.
And, like, there was that, and then there were a couple of jokes about cross-dressing and such where...
That was a little touch and go. I mean, that's like my favoriteest line in the whole movie. It's like, oh, well, you know, we can't all be acupuncturists. No, you're a great guy, but there had to be a cross-dresser. Okay, so, like, that's my favorite line in the whole movie. And no, that didn't age well.
I'm going to be honest, though. I bet you it aged a lot better than Ace Ventura.
With Ace Ventura specifically, let's be honest. Like, even the first Sharknado will age better than that movie.
Yep.
Anything is going to age better than either Ace Ventura movie. Like, those movies, in a lot of ways, are why I had problems with Jim Carrey in Sonic. I said, with Mulan, there are some things that, yeah, if you have complaints, I can see why. But I would also say to keep in mind that, A, this was the late 90s and we were stupid. And B, all of this stuff is very early on. It's literally like, if as long as you can power through the first act, you're good from there.
And it is fairly reminiscent of the time period that it's set in.
Oh, yeah.
I think unless either of you have anything you want to add, I think now is as good a time as any to wrap up.
I do have a question for you, Mike.
Yo.
Now that you've seen the first Mulan, will you watch the second one?
Normally, my answer would be no. Specifically because even with the first one, if we weren't reviewing it, I wouldn't have bothered. Like I said, I'm not a huge fan of animated Disney films. But with being in off work and in isolation and so forth, it's like,
would quarantine maybe? Mike break down far enough to watch Mulan too?
Quarantine Mike has a list of B movies long as his arm.
Okay, well, will you watch Killer Clowns from Outer Space first, and then Mulan?
That would probably be more likely. We'll go into ratings. For me, I think this is a 4. Is it
out of 5?
That's fair for Mike.
Again, like it just comes down to the basic, is it perfect? No. But the stuff that's done well is very, very well done, and I would quite simply have no problem recommending it.
Kyla?
Okay, is it out of 10?
Out of 5.
Oh, it is out of 5. Okay, yeah. 4 out of 5.
What?
She gives it a 5.
No, oh, I said 4 out of 5.
Oh, 4 out of 5. Oh, well, poo on you. I'm giving it a 5. Mulan has always been one of my favorites. Like, even now, 20 years later, you'll still hear me singing various songs from the soundtrack, to which point Kira yells at me because now she'll have that song in her head forever. So that was me last night. We actually watched it together last night.
Mm-hmm.
And then she went on to watch Mulan 2, and I was like, no, I'm done for the night.
So with that, coming up next, I'm not entirely sure what we're going to be doing, to be perfectly honest, because I don't even know if the show will look specifically like this next episode, because like, I think certainly worked well enough, but yeah, I don't know what I'm doing.
We are reviewing our options due to the current situation.
Exactly. But coming up, we definitely will have the Canadian independent vampire film Red Spring.
And we're going to have a guest for that one as well, did you not say?
I haven't said yet, and I'm not going to say who quite yet. The only thing I will say is that this is going to be, if all goes according to plan, this is going to be a complete first for the show.
Fingers crossed on that one. No. Don't invite the fates.
But otherwise, we may have one or two episodes before that. But that's the next one that we will definitely be doing. Until then, for the love of God, wash your hands. Stay at home as much as you safely can. And if you must go out, 6 feet. And if you're a Florida spring breaker, I probably hate you.
Oh, yep. Definitely.
Yep.
And until then, I'm going to leave everybody with one of the stingers from Black Panther, because quite simply, T'Challa's speech has a lot of things in it that I think people really need to be keeping in mind right about now. So until whatever the hell our next episode is.
Bye, all.
Bye.
My name is King T'Challa. Son of King T'Chaka, I am the sovereign ruler of the nation of Wakanda. And for the first time in our history, we will be sharing our knowledge and resources with the outside world. Wakanda will no longer watch from the shadows. We cannot. We must not. We will work to be an example of how we as brothers and sisters on this earth should treat each other. Now more than ever, the illusions of the vision threaten our very existence. We all know the truth. More connects us than separates us. But in times of crisis, the wise build bridges, while the foolish build barriers. We must find a way to look after one another as if we were one single tribe.
With all due respect, King T'Challa, what can a nation of farmers have to offer the rest of the world?
Don't forget to hit those like and subscribe buttons, share this video with your friends, and drop us a line anytime you like.